Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, A Framework for Understanding Poverty by Ruby Kay. Pain is a nonfiction educational and social analysis book focused on how economic class shapes behavior, communication, and access to opportunity. First published in the 1990s and widely used in schools, social services, and community training, the book argues that people from poverty, middle class, and wealth often operate by different hidden rules that can cause misunderstandings across class lines. Its purpose is practical to help educators and professionals interpret behavior more accurately and work more effectively with students, clients, and families. Pain presents poverty not simply as a lack of money, but as a set of pressures that affect time use, language, relationships, planning, and problem solving. The book has become influential in professional development because it offers a simple framework and concrete classroom and community strategies. At the same time, it has also drawn sustained criticism for oversimplifying class differences and reinforcing stereotypes. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the book's central idea of hidden rules across economic classes. The most distinctive feature of the book is its claim that each economic class is guided by hidden rules that are learned informally rather than taught explicitly. Payne compares poverty, middle class, and wealth as separate cultural environments with different assumptions about behavior, communication, and priorities. This framework is meant to explain why misunderstandings happen even when people are trying to cooperate. For example, a person from poverty may prioritize immediate needs and relationships, while middle-class institutions often expect planning, delayed gratification, and formal communication. Wealth, in Payne's model, operates with a different kind of access and network logic. The value of this idea is that it shifts attention from judging individuals as careless, lazy, or difficult toward recognizing that they may be following norms that make sense in their own context. At the same time, the framework is controversial because it can become reductive if treated as a fixed description of entire groups rather than a limited lens for interpretation. Secondly, how poverty is presented as a resource environment, not only an income level. Payne argues that poverty is not best understood as money alone, but as chronic scarcity across several kinds of resources. These include financial resources, but also time, planning space, emotional support, and access to stable systems. In this view, people in poverty are often forced into short-term decision-making because immediate survival needs take precedence over long-range goals. That helps explain why the book gives so much attention to improvisation, flexibility, and relationship-based support. The framework is especially concerned with how scarcity affects choices in schools and workplaces, where expectations often assume stable transportation, predictable schedules, and quiet space for preparation. By treating poverty as a resource burden, the book tries to explain why some standard institutional demands can be harder to meet for families under stress. This makes the book useful to professionals who need to design support systems. But it also invites criticism if resource constraints are used to explain too much behavior without enough attention to structural inequality, local context, and individual variation. Thirdly, language, discourse patterns, and why communication breaks down. A major practical section of the book concerns language differences between economic classes. Payne emphasizes that school and professional settings rely heavily on middle-class language registers, abstract vocabulary, and particular forms of discourse that are often assumed to be universal. She argues that students from poverty may be disadvantaged not because they are less capable, but because the communication style expected by institutions is unfamiliar. The book therefore highlights story structure, oral language patterns, and the need to teach academic language directly rather than assuming that students already know how to use it. This is one reason the book became popular in education. It offers teachers a language for noticing why a student may appear evasive, unfocused, or incomplete in explanation when the real issue is a mismatch in discourse norms. The strength of this section is its attention to classroom interaction. Its weakness is that language differences can be overgeneralized if they are treated as class-bound traits rather than as influences shaped by region, family, school quality, and individual experience. Fourthly, its classroom and professional development use as a practical intervention guide. The book is not only descriptive, it is designed to be used as a training tool for educators, social workers, health professionals, and other professionals who serve economically diverse populations. One reason for its influence is that it translates broad social ideas into concrete actions, especially in schools. Payne encourages readers to build mutual respect, teach hidden rules explicitly, use concrete examples before abstract tasks, and understand family structure and relationships as factors that shape student behavior. The book's educational appeal lies in its promise that professionals can adjust practices quickly and see improvements in behavior, communication, and learning. This practical orientation explains why it has been used in workshop and district trainings for years. It also makes the book easy to apply. But sometimes too easy if the framework is used without deeper analysis, professionals may confuse simplified classroom strategies with a full explanation of poverty itself. Still, its enduring role in training comes from its usefulness as a conversation starter and a toolkit for responding to class-based misunderstanding. Lastly, criticism, controversy, and the limits of the framework, a full analysis of the book has to include the criticism that has followed it for years. Scholars such as Paul Gorski and others have argued that Payne's model can slide into deficit thinking by portraying poor people through generalized and sometimes negative assumptions. Critics say the framework may encourage readers to see poverty as a set of personal habits or cultural deficits rather than the result of structural inequality, labor conditions, segregation, and policy choices. Another concern is that the book has not been treated as peer-reviewed academic research in the same way as work in sociology or education studies. This matters because the book has had real influence on school practice and public training, which means its ideas can shape how institutions interpret families and students. The controversy does not erase the book's practical value for some readers, but it does mean the framework should be used cautiously. Its best use is as a limited interpretive tool, not as a comprehensive theory of class or an authoritative description of people living in poverty. In conclusion, a framework for understanding poverty is best suited for educators, administrators, social workers, counselors, healthcare staff, and community professionals who regularly interact with people from different economic backgrounds. Readers looking for a practical introduction to class-based differences will find a clear framework for thinking about hidden rules, language use, time orientation, relationships, and the pressures of scarcity. The main benefit of the book is its usability. It offers a vocabulary and a set of classroom and workplace strategies that can help professionals interpret behavior more carefully and reduce unnecessary conflict. It stands out from many similar books because it is explicitly operational, built for training and immediate application, rather than for academic theory alone. At the same time, its lasting importance is tied to debate. The book is influential precisely because it is simple and memorable. But that simplicity is also why readers should approach it critically and avoid treating its categories as fixed truths about whole social groups. Used thoughtfully, it can sharpen awareness of class differences and prompt more responsive, respectful practice. Used uncritically, it can reinforce stereotypes. That tension is central to the book's place in its field. If you would like to support Ruby K. Payne, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.